another day, another dollar makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream and you can holler.
Hi, this is Jack Spierka with another edition of the Survival Podcast. This is a show I'm recording on a Friday morning. I'll probably publish the show on a Saturday morning or make a whole show for Monday morning. This is a show that I published this morning and recorded the day before. So it's the end of the week, and it's been a long week for me. I've been tired. Really haven't put together a specific agenda for this show. I've just been looking at a lot of things last evening online and listening to some of the talking heads or talking headless boobs, as I should call them, on TV this morning, and figured I would do kind of like a recap of some of the things we talked about in the first few episodes. Let you guys know how much I appreciate the fact that you guys are making this podcast grow faster than I ever thought it would. Really, I'm in 2 weeks right now into building this podcast. Feedburner's staff told me I had 68 subscribed listeners this morning, and that's great to see. And I know we're going to hit 100 really quick. Like I said before, I'm going to give you guys kind of a listener help me assignment when we hit 100. We're going to see how quickly we can go to 1,000. But anyway, so as I've watched the podcast numbers grow relatively quickly for the very small amount of promoting I've done with the site, it's brand new and it doesn't have a tremendous amount of traffic or anything like that yet. I'm getting quite a few subscribers that are just finding me by searching on iTunes. It's told me that there's a hunger in this world today for information and discussion about things like survivalism, self-sufficiency, more than maybe I realized when I decided to do this. I started this podcast basically because it's something that I've always had an interest in. I've tried to gain a lot of knowledge, and I've tried to put as much as I can into practice, and it's something I've enjoyed discussing. So rather than get another internet project that was solely motivated by the dollar, I thought I could do something here that was kind of neat, different, fun, and it's been that. And so the encouraging part is, one, the response I've gotten, but two, because I've started looking for material, especially watching videos on YouTube, how much this stuff is taking off in America today. How many people are actually grabbing a hold of things for themselves and taking it on as something that they're going to do and they're going to make a difference in their life with? It's really, really encouraging. And here's just a few of the things that I mean. One, in a podcast earlier this week, I talked to you about a video that I watched where a guy and his wife are producing 6,000 pounds of food on a tenth of an acre in Southern California. Now, I don't know that my third of an acre urban place here in Arlington will ever produce that kind of food. I don't plan on being in it long enough, I think, maybe to put that amount of resources and effort into it. But it sure makes me think about what I can do with that 5 acres up on the mountain in Arkansas. And it encouraged me a great deal. It also encouraged me that somebody went ahead and did it. And that's wonderful. But what I've seen by looking at, let's say, the related videos, you know, the related YouTube videos to that video, is how many people in America today are converting part of a useless lawn for Bermuda grass or St. Augustine grass into a garden. It's unbelievable to me how many people are actually doing it. And I guess here in Texas, we've been blessed in a way because our economy has been really robust compared to other parts of the United States. I could sell my house for a little more than I paid for it, and I bought it about 3.5 years ago. I think most people bought a house 3.5 years ago can't say that. It is places like Texas that have had that type of kind of propping up in their economy. We're being driven by, you know, this high gas and oil pricing, and we've got the Barnett Shale running right through Dallas-Fort Worth. And homeowners, including myself, have been making a decent amount of money just to allow the gas companies to pump gas out from underneath our house. So we're having a boom down here, in a way. Now, it's not like the late 90s when everything was booming, because it's a localized boom, and all it's doing is kind of keeping the real estate prices up and whatnot. So maybe people around here are a little more comfortable, and they're not starting to do it as fast as other places. But I've been watching videos over from California, which, you know, Californians are different folks, guys. I don't mean to offend you if you're from California, but you guys are different. I had a history teacher used to say that the reason that all the somewhat strange people end up in California is they could never be satisfied with anything. So they just kept going west until they hit the ocean and couldn't go any further. And there may be a little bit of truth to that, but you know, my point is that all over the United States, New York, and I don't mean New York City really, New York State, California, Colorado, Georgia, Tennessee, Missouri, these are some of the states that I've seen people turning urban houses. When I say urban, I mean suburbs or inner city, you know, anywhere in that variable, into true little homesteads that are at least producing food. And, I mean, I've seen some guys in Colorado, man, turning their whole front yard into a farm. And I don't know how my neighbors would probably get pretty upset with me if I did that. I don't really want to turn the front yard into a farm, but now I'm working on adding some more raised beds to the backyard, so those folks are inspiring me. Now, here's the other side of this. With the mainstream media message about this, they either do like these little lifestyle pieces about it, like, oh, look at this one family, isn't it wonderful what they've done? Like they're some kind of rock star because they can grow corn and beets and tomatoes in their backyard. And like, God's great, everybody should do it, but we know everybody won't. The angle that these kids. Or, what I've seen a lot of, and this is something that, like, this just bugs me. You can tell me, comment on this, whether it's bugs you or not, or whether you even notice this or not. I've seen a lot of reporters, and it seems like the women do this, the women reporters do this more than the men, and it almost seems like they get the women reporters get this piece assigned to them more than the men, so it's not like it's a woman thing or whatever, but they'll be talking about the food supply, shortage of food, and how much the cost of food has gone up, right? And they'll throw this thing in about people growing their own food because there's going to be so much of it, you can't ignore it. But it's always like, at the end, and it's always kind of like, some people aren't even growing their own food. And they leave that little laugh, either right before they say it or right after. It's like a nervous laughter. And I'm not sure what that is. And this would be an interesting thing to see that comment on, but, I mean, part of it is, I think, it's saying, I'm this big, powerful news executive, and, you know, we don't do stuff like that, and you know, this is like Chicken Little syndrome or something. Or is it more it's hitting them? Because they're so in touch with the news, is it hitting them that the problem's bigger than they're being allowed to say? And they're uncomfortable because maybe they're not the kind of person who will do this thing for themselves, and they're sitting there in this position now going, what are we going to do about this? I'm not really sure which one that is. So let's move on to another area that I've discussed a little bit, and I want to do a show that's more in-depth on this for you guys in the future, which is kind of protecting the money that you have, say, one way or another. But this morning, one of people I consider to be a major Bufus Americanus, Jim Cramer, the bad money guy, was on, and they were talking to him about investing. He was saying how, you know, right now, if you haven't been investing, you should start investing, and we need to be saving money, and that the best place for your money is good old-fashioned, solid mutual funds, just like it's always been, despite the fact the economy's been down. And he said, I think we need to all ask ourselves this question. Do we think it's going to be this bad 18 months from now? And I go, okay, great, Jim, you don't think it's going to be this bad 18 months from now. I don't either. I think it's going to be worse. And I hope I'm wrong and you're right, but I think it's going to be worse because every indicator is that we're in a deflation spiral with real hard assets and an inflation spiral with consumer goods and things that we actually need, like food and energy, which are no longer part of the inflation rate thanks to the food our government's doing. So I don't know where he gets off saying that. This is the other thing he said. And when times are down like this, it's always been the best time to invest. That's always been the case. It always will be the case. See, folks, there's where I want to reach through the screen and grab this guy by his neck and pull his you know, eccentric little personality out of the tube and smack him right in the face. When you say it always has been and it always will be about anything, maybe other than the sun rising in market setting, which we know one day will end as well, then you're an idiot. All right? Because there's no way that you can say just because something always has happened, it always will happen. There's a lot of people that thought that way, Carthaginians and Romans among them, all right? And the Greeks. They're all gone. They're all dead civilizations. It's always been this way. It always will be. That's just a moronic viewpoint when it comes to something as important as the assets that you have for yourself and the things that you keep for yourself and your family's wealth. Just because something always was doesn't mean it always will be. Alright? And the guy had not one reason. And remember, this is the guy that was saying that Bear Stearns was a good buy a week before they crashed and lost every freaking dime that people put into it. When it was at $35, it was a good buy. Yeah, Jim. And then the next week, where did it go? It was under a buck. So, Jim, I'm sorry. I don't want to take your advice. I don't think the American people should take your investment advice. Here's what I think's going on. Jim Cramer and all these money expert guys, right? They make money off the stock market. They want to see the stock market recover. They don't care if it goes down, but they don't want it to go way down, to crash to the oblivion, to where people go, I ain't doing this no more. I'm out of this. I'm looking for different types of investments in the future. They don't want to see the economy squashed. Well, the reality is, if you're smart right now, you're pulling your money out of the stock market. Let me say that again. The reality is, if you're smart right now, you're pulling your money out of the stock market. This is not a time to be holding stocks. It just isn't. I'm not going to tell you what to do with your money, but I will tell you that this is, I'm personally not comfortable holding stock right now. Especially the typical, everyday, run-of-the-mill American stock that's in mutual funds that Joe Average has across our nation. Just not comfortable. Because I know the economy is getting worse, not better. When the economy gets worse, the stock market goes down. The problem for these talking boobheads is if you and I, and let's say, I don't know, 20 million Americans wake up to this. Not everybody, it's 20 million of us. But you know what? This sucks. And we all convert our money into cash, commodity-based assets. And say, we're going to wait for this thing to ride out. Well, there's the stock market crash right there. The very action of us protecting ourselves and pulling the money out will drive the market down. Let me say it again. The very act of you being smart, pulling your money out, coupled with enough other Americans being smart, pulling their money out, it'll be like the run on the banks in 1929, except it'll be a run on the market. People don't understand that. You take the money out of the market, the stock has to go down. It's simple supply and demand. Right? The reason the stock goes up is because the company was profitable and more people want to buy it and more people are willing to pay more for it. Right? That's why we have things like price-to-earnings ratios and stuff like that. If stock was just priced based on its intrinsic value against the company, it would go up very slowly or very fast, but it would all be dependent on the company itself. The company's actions, it would be based on nothing but the profit margin of the company. But we have upside-down P.E. ratios all over the place where companies are making a little bit of money, but their stock's going up very, very rapidly because people are speculating on it, all right? So that's, I'm not saying that's wrong or bad or evil capitalism. It's fine. That's the way it works. But the other side of that is, once you have the majority of Americans invested in the stock market, which we are now, on one level or another, and that money starts to come out fast, the price has to go down. It's just the way that it works. Okay? Nothing alarmist about that. No Illuminati's necessary. 20 million Americans pull their investments out, stock market goes down. Let me bend something else off of you then as we look at this next 18 months of Mr. Cramer's brilliance. The very first baby boomers have now officially started to retire. More and more and more of them are going to be retiring. The market has been kind of crappy lately to them. They're now looking at these very large accounts. These people have worked their whole lives. Many of them are millionaires. Many of them are just under millionaire status. They have $700,000, $800,000. These people are now ready to take that money that's been leveraged in these investments and move them into much safer assets like money market accounts, like gold. And I don't know where the money's going to go, but I can tell you one thing is going to happen. It's going to come out of these higher risk investments. Because even the talking head tells you, well, when you're 60 and you start, going toward retirement, you need to start moving more and more of your money to save things like bonds and, money markets and just basic CDs, right? So these people they've done what they've been told the whole time, and it's worked out okay. last couple of years. They would have been better off if they would have done it a little bit early. But they've done what they've been told the whole time. It worked out. Why don't you think they're going to do what they're being told to do now? Move the money out. So when we have this massive, massive basketball moving through the pipe of these baby boomers going into retirement, they're going to pull tons of money out, folks. That's going to drive the market down, too. So without the economy being crappy, I'm telling you that people are pulling their money out. I pulled my money out. A lot of you guys are pulling your money out. The baby boomers are going to pull their money out just because they're getting old. So the market's going to decline. It's going to happen. Unless some major boom comes back, you know, like a 90s thing. And I just don't see that happening anytime soon. Maybe it will. Maybe I'll be wrong. But like I said a million times, you say make your money safe when everything's crappy. When things are going to turn around, you see it coming. We saw this decline coming like a freight train. We always see the up coming like a freight train, and we always see the down coming like a freight train. Now, these people will tell you, well, no one can predict the market accurately. If I could do that, I'd be worth millions of dollars and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, well, you know what? No one can predict the market to the point where I can sell today, buy tomorrow, sell today, buy tomorrow, and always have a workout. But when it comes to trends, 1, 2, 3, 4 year trends, these things have huge indicators. And none of these people are saying, you know what, in the next 3 months, it's going to get better. None of them. Even the ones that are like, 18 months from now, but you know why I say 18 months? That's a long time in the American psyche. That's a long time in the modern global psyche, folks, right? 18 months is forever. And 18 months from now, you could be saying 18 months again if you're one of these people. It'll get better. It'll be, you know, we have to ask ourselves a question. Is it going to be this bad in 18 months? I don't think so. And sooner or later, these guys figure it out, but you're right. And we'll be like, see, he was right. Look, he was right. My money's coming back. It's all going back up. Hey, never mind that you just lost 40K or 20K or 10K or 5K, whatever it is. You didn't have to lose it. I'm not talking about getting risky and greedy with high leveraged investments. I'm simply talking about when times are bad, knowing enough to get out of the way of a freight train that's coming to take away what you've worked so hard and diligently for. Okay, let's talk about another thing. We'll kind of blend two things here. The economy and fuel efficiency, peak oil, that type of thing, and the price of gasoline all together in one by talking about the fact that a lot of our automakers are shutting down plants. Toyota, who's been one of the most successful automakers in the past 20 years, honestly, is shutting down one of its Tundra plants, and they said planned for 3 months, what they say, to let dealers clear out inventory. Which means you're going to see lots of Toyota commercials. We've got Tundras everywhere, blah, blah, you know, that kind of thing. But my question is, are people going to buy them right now? You know, we think of Toyota as being fuel efficient, but a Toyota Tundra is not a fuel efficient vehicle. I think most of the Chevy half-ton trucks are more fuel efficient than Toyota Tundras. So, you know, who's going to buy those trucks right now? How much money is Toyota going to lose selling them cheap to get rid of them? And will that plant ever open? And Chevy's closing some plants, and GM as a whole, which is, you know, the parent company, and Ford's closing some plants, and we're seeing a lot of these plants close, and they're making less SUVs, less trucks. Now, I look around me here in Texas, and as you might imagine, I see a lot of trucks. But I have to own a truck. I don't drive it long distances because it's expensive to do, and it's really not what I bought it for. My wife takes me to work every day and back, but she drives a whopping 14 miles to and from work. But it's a big old 4x4 Dodge Ram, and I ain't going to sell it. And I'm not going to sell it because even with the price of gas, it's paid for. I don't know a dime on it, and it's got low mileage, and I can drive it for 10 more years as long as there's gas to put it in anyway. That's a great truck for us. But if I was going to buy a new vehicle right now, it wouldn't be a truck. And if it was, I would have to have a reason, like it's a work vehicle, something like that. I need to be hauling or pulling or something like that. If I bought another vehicle right now, and I'm actually kicking this around, I'd buy something highly fuel efficient. Now, as you guys might know, I drive this 2006 Jetta, and it gets extremely good mileage, and it's what I'm going to continue to drive to Frisco and Arlington back and forth. But I thought about, you know, what could I get that would be just kind of cool and fun to kind of bump around with on the weekends? And believe it or not, I'm thinking about buying a moped. You might be like, what? Buy a moped? I've got all these really nice, you know, 150cc, two-rider, looks almost like a motorcycle mopeds. Because I have a friend that has one, and I jumped on the thing, and they're fun as heck. And, you know, they're not going to do 150 miles an hour and get me killed. And I promise you, you're never going to hear a podcast, it's a Jack Spiro, you know, driving this thing 50 miles, no way. Not going to do it. But, you know, if we're going to shopping and visiting family and stuff like that, these things get 80 miles to the gallon. And, you know, I think it's something you're going to see a lot more Americans doing is buying things like mopeds and small motorcycles. And even the, you know, like these newer hybrid electric, and there's this thing called Rev Power, and they're not available yet, but they have prototypes working. And basically, you put like one of those little water bottles to hold your gasoline, and they get over like 200 miles to the gallon. It's just basically a wheel that you strap onto any 26-inch bicycle and run about 25 miles an hour without pedaling. And that's not really my, I'm more, you know, hey, let me at least hit, you know, 50, 60 miles an hour on Cooper Street, which is my main street that runs through Arlington. So I'm going to want maybe like a moped, but I can see those things in the more residential-centric little towns and stuff becoming quite popular. So what we're seeing is Americans going to these fuel-efficient choices. As I look around, I start to see more and more of the new cars I see are the hybrids, which I'm not exactly the biggest fan of, because I think that they're a long payback, even with $4 gas. But I'm seeing a lot more just small fuel-efficient vehicles, Mazdas, and some of the smaller American cars and whatnot. And you see, the thing is that I don't think people are doing it to try to save the planet. I think they're doing it because gas is expensive. And I think that, you know, maybe that is one good thing about the gas being so high right now, is that it's making people look for alternatives and different ways to do things. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with finding alternatives and different ways and more affordable ways to do things. My hope is just that if gas starts to come down, which I don't think it's going to, but if it does, if we get lucky, these people have made these adjustments in their life, I hope they continue to use them, because I hope they don't do them as like a big sacrifice. I think, you know, like I said, if I picked up a moped, even by these pretty cool mopeds for under $2,000, brand new, warranty, if I pick that up, I'm going to do it because thinking about it is kind of like a fun little thing to do. And, you know, the fact if gas went back to a buck, it just means it's even less money to go bumping down to Tom Thumb, which is only a couple miles down the road with, and things like that. So it would be more of a lifestyle choice that I would be making for enjoyment. It happens to be economically beneficial. So hopefully my fellow Americans and folks around the world, honestly, that are buying these more fuel-efficient transportation methods are thinking about that. Now, the problem is, what does this mean for GM and Chevrolet? And that's an interesting thing to think about. What does it mean for Toyota and Mazda and all these other companies? I mean, right now people are buying these smaller cars and all, but I think people are looking for ways to do more telecommuting to work. Everybody's looking for ways to minimize transportation. And I think that spells bad news for the automobile makers across the board long term. That it's going to be a long time before we start to see a real recovery in that industry, if we ever do. These guys are going to have to get on board and figure out how to make a real electric car that works, that people can afford. That will spur the automobile industry back, or these hydrogen fuel cell hybrids and things like that, and more efficient, more affordable hybrids, all of these different things. But this is going to make me take you to a place that most people haven't thought about. One of the fundamentals of government is quite simple. No government program, no government platform, no government department is built with the intention from the beginning or at any time during its existence to ever stop existing, to get smaller, to go away, to become less. Every government program ever created over time has grown and gotten bigger. The entire system of government, the entire bureaucracy of government is designed around expansion. More, spend more money. That's what the governments do. Okay? So here's the problem as people move into truly reducing fuel consumption. And fuel consumption in the United States is down 2.5% this year over last year. 2.5%. So don't let people lie to you. Don't let the alarmists tell you that Americans are just don't care about this stuff. We are using less. And it's not all supply and demand driving the price and other things like that. But when we look at this factor, this reality, And I don't care what your political leanings are. You can't argue the fact that every time the government creates a department, it's designed to get bigger, last longer, stick around forever. So let me ask you a question. Do you realize how much of our government is paid for right now with motor fuels taxes at the city, state, and federal levels? A lot of cities have little motor fuels taxes. States all do. And the federal government, of course, takes a big chunk of the money that you put into your gas tank as a federal tax on fuel. There's a ton of government run by the fuel taxes. So as we decrease, and we were already down 2%, as we decrease our dependence on fuel, the only thing they can do is raise the tax on fuel. Because even though Americans have been blessed, I guess I would say, without having huge fuel taxes the way that they do in, let's say, Europe, where people are paying $12 now, some places, $8 or $12 a gallon for gas, even though we have lower taxes than they do, there's still a lot of our government being run up. And so even though that nobody in the government wants to talk about raising the fuel tax, eventually the government just has a shortfall. The taxes aren't there. So they either have to tax the fuel higher, or they have to find another source of taxes. Now, if we get to a point where everybody's running around with electric cars, or cars that get 80 to 90 miles to the gallon, which is possible, all right? Definitely possible we get to that point if everything doesn't just crumble, which that's another alternative. But let's say that things kind of hold together enough to get there. And that the free market actually forces these manufacturers to start building more fuel efficient, more and more and more. Not just these little steps, they've been taking big steps. Really reduces this. More hybrids are out there. More electric vehicles. More people running around on mopeds because it's fun. More people on motorcycles. And we take the fuel consumption of the United States and we drop it by, let's say, 20%. Which if we did it in a year, it's 2%. It's definitely possible. Now, everybody would look around and say, oh, that's great, especially environmentalists. Like, woo-hoo, less carbon, right? Yay, no more global warming, whatever. Nonsense. Complete nonsense. But let's just look at the other side of that. What's the government going to do with all that shortfall in taxes? Let me tell you what they're going to do, folks. In my car, I have a little thing called a toll tag. And I spend about $2 each way, each day, driving on the Dallas North Tollway to pay a toll. Well, I think that every vehicle in America in 10 years from now is going to have some sort of a toll tag in it. That's going to be part. If you want to drive, if you want to be on a road in America, you're going to have something similar to this, something that charges you. And we're going to end up paying everywhere we drive. Everything's going to be a toll road. That's what's coming next. Because the government will not let these departments and these programs that live off of this motor fuels tax go away. Will it be everywhere right away? No, it'll be a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit here. But you'll start to see more and more toll roads, more and more, and you're going to see time of day charging based on taxation. In other words, they're going to charge you more to drive between 7 and 9 on major highways than they charge you, let's say, between 9 and 4. And then they're going to jack the rates up again between like 4 and 6. And they've even started talking about doing something like this in Dallas already. And they're going to start doing like, okay, well, that lane over there that used to be the HOV lane, now it's the express lane, right? And you guys up in the Northeast, express lanes are good. You jump over there, but you're not exiting. So no, it's going to be different. No, you're going to pay more to go in that lane. So you're going to have like different rates for different lanes. That's where we're going. That might sound Orwellian, but it's a logical place for things to go next. Simply because, again, government programs and government departments seldom shrink. They always grow, and they're never designed to go away. So all of these things that exist off this motor fuels tax, every time we cut fuel consumption, we cut what we're paying in taxes on fuel, and we cut the revenue to the government in those methods. That might start to answer the question for you, why doesn't the government do more to make us less dependent on fuel? They might want to make us less dependent on foreign fuels, right? But they don't want us using less fuel. That's why they're big on the ethanol thing. As long as you put it in a pump, and it's paid for by the gallon, there's a system in place to tax it already. People start using electricity, plugging their cars in, it's really good enough to go to work and back and do what they need to do on a daily basis, then all you're left with is taxing electricity. It's going to be a lot harder to do. And as more and more people start developing their own solar systems, eventually you get to a point where a person can be completely independent of that taxation system. It's not set up to work that way. So that's just something else to think about. So that's really it for me today, folks. I guess I stretched about a 30-minute show out of this without even having a plan. I hope I wasn't too much of a rambler today, and I hope I still was entertaining and engaging. And I'm looking for suggested topics for the show, so, you know, go by the blog anytime you like and leave me a comment. I'm going to put a page on the site. Hopefully, by the time this podcast is done, that page will be there. It'll be like a contact me page. Or if you don't really want to publicly comment, but you want to contact me, there'll be a way to do that. I don't want to publish an email because, like all of you guys, I get too much spam. But remember, you know, the Survival Podcast, we're here to help you live the life that you want to live when there's times get tough or even if they don't. And hope you're enjoying things. And spend some time on YouTube, folks. Google things like solar oven. Or like Google, but, you know, Google means search now. Go to YouTube, search for things like solar ovens, backyard farming, suburban permaculture. Just get a view of what's out there. It'll give you some hope that we're not the only ones. There's a lot of us. There's a big movement afoot. That means a couple things. One, it means we're not alone, and that's good because we have people that help us with our planning, things like this show and other people that are putting materials together to help you. That's great. But the other side of that means that we're right. There is a problem. People tend to create solutions when the problem is real enough for them. So that means that people are realizing these problems. The environmental impact, the economic impact is coming home to roost for people. That's encouraging because the more people that are prepared, the softer the landing will have to any crash. I hope you guys have a great day, and thank you again for tuning in to the Survival Podcast.
You can scream, and you can holler. It really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.